The order it is 1:35, and it is the 16th of March. The bill sponsors ask us to postpone SB 272, and I am going to ask the committee to take a look at.
You said 272. Did you mean 273?
272 is what I have.
Postponing that.
The mortgage lending is postponed. We have a 273 that is motor vehicle sales.
Okay.
And on 307, I'm still somewhat troubled by the questions that Mr. Sniffen had about the changes, and it appears to me that we could either put everything in the 7-day notice or put everything in the 10-day notice, and I've given you a letter from Mr. Sniffen, and I'd ask the committee to take a look at that, and we will bring it up next week to further discuss it. And see if we should try to work some of these things out, or if you want to just push it off onto judiciary and let their broad shoulders take care of it. So, so that's so we're going to skip over 307, and we have two new bills before us today. SB 273, which is motor vehicle sales, from Senator Cowdery. And as a reminder, to help our poor committee staff, we're having some trouble getting all the information. So please use the mic. Make sure it's pointed at your chin, or as Senator Wilkins likes to say, one of your chins. And if I will try to help if we have more than one person testifying, to make sure that the microphone gets to them. So with that, we will move to Senate Bill 273, and Senator Cowdery's staff is with us. If this bill is as simple as it is short.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ryan McKinster. I'm staff to Senator John Cowdery. I believe most of you have seen something similar to this before in a previous incarnation. After much work, I believe, by the chairman and others on similar legislation, we've worked with the parties involved to come up with something we think is clean, clear, concise, and actually achieves what needs to be achieved to right some language that actually is problematic currently. Some changes were made to AS 866. Regarding vehicle sales, and there's some unintended consequences. The way the language was drafted, it basically prohibited new and used car dealers, correctly used car dealers, from selling new cars, but it also went farther than that and prohibited both both groups from selling current model used cars. And a current model used car doesn't necessarily have to be obviously not a brand new car, it's used, but it could fall in the current model year. Subsequently, by law, if the law was followed strictly to the way it is written, a new car dealer or a used car dealer would have to hold a returned car, if it's the current model year, on their lot until that car was not current model anymore. This does a service to the dealers. They can't really be expected to hold onto a car that's consecutively losing value. And on the same hand, you're doing a disservice to the consumer, because this consumer doesn't get as broad of choices to pick from. Secondarily, if I say I am a serviceman and I get a new car, or at least some reason I get shipped overseas and I have to turn it back in, it's the same current model year, it's going to make it really hard for me to turn it into a dealer, that knowing they have to keep it on their lot or property unsellable for a certain amount of time. Currently, that is the way the law is written. It is not being followed directly to the law. It's being somewhat overlooked. Basically, this bill addresses that issue by changing the language so that current model vehicles could be sold by used and new car dealers. And it's we've actually spoken with the Car Dealers Association. Mr. John Cook, I believe, is online, and they have given our support, which is, and the Car Dealer Association is made up of used and new car dealers. They've given our support on this, They feel this law needs to be fixed, changed, so that none of them are, or that, so all of them are in compliance. And I also have Ed Sniffen from the Department of Law on, who we work closely with this bill to try to address the issues. And he will also be able to talk about some other issues that were attempted to address in the previous bill that have been addressed with other legislation.
All right, let me go to Mr. Sniffen right away and Mr. Cook secondarily, and they might give us information. It'll save us some questions or generate more questions. Mr. Sniffen, are you with us, please?
Yes, Chairman Bundy. Thank you.
Would you identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony?
Thank you. My name is Ed Sniffen. I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law in Anchorage, and I work in the Consumer Protection Unit where I have a large responsibility for regulating the car dealers in Alaska. And as Mr. McKinstry mentioned, I think this bill is one that has support from the industry, and it's one that we've been working with Senator Cowdery on for several years. There were some other issues that we tried to address in former versions of this bill that we have addressed in other parts of our Auto Dealer Act. So I believe this is one of those fairly straightforward and, as you mentioned, simple bills that is something we need to do to allow us to enforce our laws so we can sell these current model used vehicles to consumers. So if there are any questions about the bill, I'm happy to answer any, but I don't know that we need to get into a lot of detail on some of the historical issues that have come up from the industry. I think this the bill is something everyone can support and go forward with.
So it's fair.
Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you. It's fair to say that from your view as a consumer advocate, the bill is one you're comfortable with.
Senator Bundy, yes, that is correct.
All right. Thank you. I'd like to go to Mr. Cook, then, the Automobile Dealers Association.
Yes. Thank you, Chairman Bundy. My name is John Cook. I am the legislative director of the Alaska Auto Dealers Association, and also I'm up here at Aurora Motors in Fairbanks, Alaska. I guess I would just mirror what Assistant Attorney General Sniffen and Ryan have relayed to you, which is that the current language, current statutes that are on the books, nearly every dealer new and used in the state has probably violated that statute. We don't like violating statutes. We'd rather be in compliance. You know, this issue's been floating around for the last couple of years. And we believe that this statute would benefit new car dealers, used car dealers, and most importantly, consumers. Just to give a quick example of issues that could be problematic, I am right now selling 2007 Yukons. Under the current statute, no other dealer would be allowed to take that vehicle on trade. Well, I guess they could, but they would have to sell it back to me or sit on it for a period of nearly 18 months. Obviously, that puts, when you only have one choice to go to, that's very detrimental to the consumer, you know, and it's detrimental to the dealerships as well. So, you know, we see this, you know, a bill as fixing several problems and being as a benefit to all three parties. Secondly, it eliminates some language, and again, I'm not sure the whole historical, you know, all the history behind AS 0866, but it eliminates Section B, and I don't know where that wording ever came from, but it gets rid of that, and that that is another good thing there. So I'm available for any questions, and again, I'd like to thank Assistant Attorney General Sniffen and Senator Cowdery and his staff. We've worked on this for well over a year, and I'm glad that we've come up with something that I believe is very simple and clean and straightforward.
Eventually, in spite of our best efforts, we can sometimes come to a reasonable compromise. Questions for either Mr. Sniffen, Mr. Cook, or the bill sponsor? Our resident automotive person has comfort with this bill.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I am an automobile dealer with both a new and I sell new and used vehicles. I've done so since 1977 in the state of Alaska, just for the record. Mr. Chairman, this addresses part of what I would call my concern, and it does it all right. You know, some dealers actively take part in a black market industry which is founded on fraud. This does not address that problem. However, it does address a concern in the law that causes dealers who do not take part in the black market to be in violation of Alaska statutes. And it does so in a manner that I think is acceptable, and I support this bill.
All right, thank you. Anyone else like to testify on Senate Bill 273? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony. Are there any amendments? And as I said, this was a pretty short bill. So there seems to be no controversy. If the committee's comfortable, I would entertain a motion. Senator.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move that Senate Bill 273 and the accompanying fiscal note move on to the next committee of referral with individual recommendations.
All right, thank you. Jane?
Senator
Stevens?
Yes.
Senator Davis?
Yes.
Senator Ellis?
Yes.
Senator Stevens?
Yes.
Senator Bundy?
Yes. 273 is on its way. That brings us to Senate Bill 300 and Senator Seekins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have Mr. Hove with me this morning, this afternoon. I'm sorry it's already melted into the afternoon. And I'll ask him to present the bill.
Mr. Hove.
Good afternoon. For the record, Brian Hove, staff to Senator Seekins.
This Senate is one bill. Of those bills, by the way, Mr. Chairman, that is so simple.
That even your staff could explain it.
We'll see. Senate Bill 300 updates the definition
Excuse me, Mr. Hope. Make sure that mic is pointed right at you. We're a little off to the side. I don't want to miss any of your precious testimony.
Senate Bill 300 updates the definition of principal balance found in the Alaska Retail Installment Sales Contract to accommodate the proper disclosure of negative equity. The bill clarifies how, within a lease arrangement, an incident of negative equity is handled, as well as a contract. There was a time when lending institutions required borrowers to monetarily participate in purchase transactions. In fact, down payments of 25% were quite common. Furthermore, term loans were held to a maximum of 36 months. But over the last several years, these guidelines have gone by the wayside. The strength and stability of the national economy have spurred consumers to demand lower payment loans along with greater value. Banks, credit unions, and acceptance companies have accommodated the marketplace by offering low or no down payment options, as well as lengthening the allowable repayment period for many types of lending products. This phenomenon is particularly evident in retail auto sales, where qualified buyers often broaden their budget by opting for 100% financing over the longest possible term. The mathematical effect of this financing strategy is simple. The point in time at which the vehicle's market value exceeds the outstanding balance on the underlying loan occurs much later than it otherwise would. Until this point is reached, the owner's equity position is commonly known as upside down or negative. In other words, the value of the vehicle is not yet sufficient to completely repay the outstanding balance on the loan. As a result, when the owner wants to trade for a different vehicle, the dealer has to figure out some way to accommodate the loan payoff in the trade-in. At one time, it was common practice in some states to simply inflate the price of the car to be purchased enough to permit an allowance for the trade-in that would cover the amount owed. The negative equity disappears. This method solved the equity problem but failed to adequately describe the transaction mathematically. So over time, this practice fell into disfavor, and today it is more common that new vehicles are sold at non-negotiable prices, such as factory incentive programs. Furthermore, the Federal Reserve Board provided guidance on this issue through revisions made to Regulations M and Z. These regs control the manner in which lease and credit transactions, respectively, are disclosed. Regulation M was revised to provide a dedicated disclosure line on the lease agreement in cases where a prior loan or lease balance, negative equity, is rolled into the new lease transaction. Revisions made to Reg Z altered the definition of down payment, thereby solving the negative equity issue as it pertains to a loan transaction. So what does all this have to do with Senate Bill 300? The vast majority of banks and credit unions are federally regulated. Therefore, they follow federal disclosure laws. State laws do not come into play. However, acceptance companies like GMAC, Ford Motor Credit, and others are required to follow both state and federal laws. The dual adherence requirement has effectively created a disparity in the manner in which loan and lease transactions are disclosed in cases involving negative equity here in Alaska. So the bottom line is that while federal law has been revised to accommodate this situation, our state law has not. SB 300 resolves this disparity by updating the definition of principal balance as it pertains to the state's disclosure requirements for retail sales contracts found in Chapter 10, Title 45. Furthermore, the bill adds corresponding language to Chapter 25 pertaining to the handling of negative equity with respect to lease agreements. These modifications bring state and federal law back into alignment. Thank you.
Thank you. And now this is based on federal regulations?
The banks and credit unions and acceptance companies are your typical financing options for instance, purchasing new vehicles. Banks and credit unions are required to follow federal law. Acceptance companies like GMAC and Ford Motor Credit and others are required to follow not only federal law but also state law. And this is what brings us here today. The feds have accommodated this situation through regulations M and Z for the banks and the credit unions. The situation hasn't been accommodated for the Ford Motor Credits, Chrysler Credit, GMACs, which must follow not only Fed but also state law.
And if I can, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Seekins.
There's a gray area in our law as to whether or not the disclosures that are required under federal law meet our own statutes as far as disclosures and requirements are concerned. So what this does is it just totally brings our state law into alignment with the federal law and Regulation Z and AM, I believe, and brings those acceptance companies that have to comply with our law and the federal law the comfort of knowing that that the disclosure is in compliance with both state and federal law.
Can you help us understand then how
you got
how this process works?
Let me give you some examples.
Yeah,
we have some examples here for you to take a look at. In the industry, we call the person who owes more on their car when they want to trade in it than it's worth upside down. So we have an example here of Upside Down Joe, and this is not an uncommon situation. I think we set a record not too long ago where someone came in, they owed $19,000 more on their car than it was worth, which is not a something that we encourage, but is something that some people get into. We try to do a better job than that. It's not something that's
sounds like my lawyer bill.
Yeah. If you take a look at the first one, you see that's a Ford Credit contract there. And if you take a look at this, you'll see that there's a on the second page, which is the extension of this long contract, you'll see circled there it says outstanding prior balance, 3586. As a result of the vehicle that we, in this hypothetical here for Upside Down Joe, to have had owed $3,586 more than his car was worth. So it's disclosed at that point of the contract. The next contract is a lease agreement. You know, it's a simple interest lease agreement. I mean, wait a second. The first one was a lease agreement.
Lease agreement.
The second one is a retail installment contract, which starts on page number 3 in your packet. And you'll see that about two-thirds of the way down it says Ford Motor Credit, negative equity. These are amounts to be paid to insurance companies it lays it out right there to Ford Motor Credit, $3,586. If you go to the next original that's out there is one from Wells Fargo Bank. And on this one, if you look about a third of the way down.
I'm sorry, could you give us?
This one.
Am I on the proper page?
Yes, it's Wells Fargo Bank. It tells it on the page after that, the signature section. And it says here, excess of lien over trade value, 3586. It identifies it there. This is a contract that has to meet Regulation Z and Regulation M, but Regulation Z on a retail installment contract. The other one, the Ford Credit, would meet Regulation Z, but it might not meet our own regulations for disclosure. So we're just bringing our law under the same levels of disclosure that are required under federal law, making sure that they comply with that. So that's, again, the next one after that is one from Alaska USA Federal Credit Union. Again, here you'll notice that there is that same value about two-thirds of the way down in that left column, Ford Motor Credit, trade-in payoff, 3586.
Okay.
You can identify it many different ways, but you have to disclose what it is, what that charge is.
And Ed, can you walk us through what the process is? I'm upside down, Joe. Now I'm coming in to trade in this vehicle. It has... no value as a trade-in, it has negative
value.
So in order to make that trade, I would pay this off and then start my new loan.
Yeah, it's included in the financing on the new vehicle, and that credit decision is made based on your ability to pay.
So they end up financing that first vehicle twice.
In effect, part of it, yes, they do.
Yeah.
And it's and again, it's one of those situations where many times in the past, if you went in and bought a new vehicle, you didn't have a trade-in, people look at what your trade-in is, I mean, what your down payment would be. In today's world, many of the buying decisions are made on your ability to pay, not necessarily on the terms in the deal. And can you afford those monthly payments? As a result, have financing that goes out to 7 years in some cases. Someone at 3 years down the road wants to trade that vehicle in for something new. They don't have any equity. They have a negative equity situation in the car. But they say, I really want the new car anyhow. I'm willing to finance it rather than come up with it by going down to a small loan company or some other place to do it. But I'll finance it. And what the requirement is that if they're doing that, it has to be fully disclosed in the deal.
And so as with our consumer loans, the full interest costs are required to be disclosed.
Yes, absolutely. And Mr. Sniffen, I don't know if he's still online or not, but in the prior committee, he had looked at this, had no problem with it.
Yeah.
Attorney General's in it. Again, it is intent to bring our disclosure rules in line with the federal disclosure rules.
As I remember my car purchasing history, going to buy a vehicle and say, can't make the deal. I said, well, we'll just inflate the purchase price and give you more for your trade-in so you're down.
Yes.
It's workable.
That was what used to happen. In some cases, it may happen again, but the finance companies really frown on that. They know what that vehicle's MSRP is, and if you blow that MSRP up too high in order to do that, they think that is something that should not happen, and I agree with them that it would be preferable to disclose the negative equity rather than to inflate the price of the new vehicle you're buying.
Mr. Sniffen isn't online, and I would like to ask him to comment. Mr. Sniffen?
Yes, Chairman Bundy, thank you. Again, Ed Sniffen with the Department of Law in Anchorage. I'm an Assistant Attorney General where I enforce Alaska's Consumer Protection Act and work with the auto dealers on many of these issues. And as Senator Seekins mentioned, we have looked at this bill, and let me give you sort of a different twist on how we viewed this. We reviewed this to make sure that consumers are protected either way with respect to disclosures of how much it's costing them to borrow money to finance these transactions. And under the current law, you could make an argument that when you have somebody who's upside down in a car and they come in to trade it in, two things happen. One, the dealer loans you money to pay off your car. And in the case of the $19,000 negative equity, the car dealership is essentially loaning you $19,000 and then paying off your loan on your vehicle. And that transaction separately requires all kinds of disclosures under Regulation Z, the Federal Truth in Lending Act. And then if you want to sell that customer another vehicle, you can sell them another vehicle and say, fine, I'll sell you this vehicle, and I'm also going to loan you money to buy this vehicle. And so here's a second loan, essentially, that I'm making you, and under this new contract, your payments are going to be X. And the disclosures for that transaction may be under our Retail Installment Sales Act, it may be under the Consumer Leasing Act, and it may be under the Truth in Lending Act, depending on how financing happens. And what this bill does, and I think as Senator Seekins correctly explained, it allows the dealerships to follow the federal model, which essentially says you can take the loan that you made to the consumer to pay off his old vehicle, wrap it into the loan you're making him for the new vehicle, and you can just do one disclosure that explains the finance charge and the cost of credit over time and all of those things. And we did look at those regulations very carefully to make sure that the language in this bill was consistent with the federal Regulation M and Regulation Z, and it is. So we support, you know, this change, and we believe it won't have any adverse impacts on consumers.
But there is no regulation anywhere that requires you to put on these forms that a fool and their money are soon parted?
Yes, Chairman Bundy, that's probably a good thing to suggest, but no, there isn't.
Yeah, okay. Never mind. Yeah, we'd have to put that on a lot of credit cards then, too.
Yes, we would.
All right, questions for the bill sponsor, Mr. Sniffen?
I have one other thing, Mr. Chairman, if I could.
Yes, Senator Seekins.
Just today, casually, someone handed me what they suggested might be a modification to this bill, in that that in 4510.030, that a clarification there may be consistent with what we're doing here. That statute says that the retail installment contract must contain the names of the seller and the buyer, the place of the business, the seller, the residence, the other address for the biller, as named by the buyer, and a description or identification of the goods sold or to be sold or services furnished or rendered to the furnished or rendered. Also must contain the following items, and one of the things they suggested is that we add in there any other charges, including the amount, if any, that the seller agrees to pay to discharge an outstanding obligation of the buyer under an existing motor vehicle agreement, loan installment, or sales contract or lease, which would be compatible with what we were attempting to do here, and to change that statute to say, again, under our statutes, that charge must be clearly contained in the agreement as well.
It reads, I think, perhaps a little more plainly than the first attempt, and so.
Well, this would be in addition to what we've said here. Yeah. This would be a follow up on the content of the.
So you're suggesting that perhaps we hold this bill for a CS and add this information.
I could do that, or we could do a conceptual amendment, whichever you would prefer.
I'd rather see it in one. Yeah. In a CS, if
we can do that.
Yeah, I don't see any reason to hold the bill any longer than that, but a CS would, I think, be easier for the committee.
We can do that, and I agree with the I agree with the concept. There's a couple of words that I probably would change.
All right.
So I'll do that.
All right, we'll do that. We'll hold this bill for a CS. Next Tuesday and Thursday, we have interesting times. On Tuesday, the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development and Department of Revenue, in response to a request of mine, will be meeting with us to share some information on industry's net return to the general fund. I, at least, have had a number of questions about the comparison between we'll stand at ease just a minute. Joe? On the record. In any case, in response to questions I've had about what's the net return to the general fund for a lot of Alaska industry compared to what we the state might be providing as subsidies or incentives. And then on Thursday, you may be aware that there was a change in the administrator of our insurance program, and there's been some confusion and some questions about how this contract was awarded or how the process was worked in. And I've asked that the Department of Administration come and chat with us on Thursday as well, going over what I think are some irregularities in the process there. So on both Tuesday and Thursday, we will meet in the Senate Finance Room and at 1:30 for, I hope, some interesting information for our use. Anything more to come before the committee? If not, we can stand adjourned at 2:05.